Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
What's happening, Derek?
Not much, man. Another week.
You were supposed to be camping this week, but you're not.
I was.
This week.
I had to back out.
You had to back out. I'm going next weekend for 4 days.
Yes,
you're going. Up to Tsumogamy.
Nice.
Really? Yes. Can't wait. Get out of the town. Get out of the city. Woohoo. It's going to be a good year for paddling. That's all I'm saying.
It is. It's already starting to look up.
Right?
I'm so curious what the weather's going to be like this year because it's not as predictable anymore in recent years.
Well, it's been really nice during the week.
Yeah, weekends.
And then it rains on the weekend. It better not be a whole summer of that crap.
I know, right?
That's all I'm saying right now. That just gets so frustrating. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what? It comes to a point where you just go paddle anyway, but...
Yeah, absolutely, you know, yeah.
I don't want to be paddling in the rain all the
time. And I remember being very much focused on the weather when I started a lot of my tripping back in, 20-plus years ago, 25 years ago. And I really focused, and I remember I would... back when I had, the old inkjet printers, I would print out some forecasted weather and take it with me with my maps and be so concerned about it. I don't really care that much anymore.
You know what? I don't care what the weather's going to be. I don't enjoy paddling in the rain. I don't enjoy paddling in the big winds. I'll do it.
Yeah.
But I'd rather have nice, partly cloudy, just to get a break from the full-on sun constantly all day. But nice paddle weather is always preferred.
Yes.
I hate portaging in the rain.
The last Burt Reynolds trip that we did, it was coming out on the last 2 days. So a second to last day, that entire day, and we ended up cutting it short. So it ended up being the last day because we were going to camp within like an hour of the takeout and leave the next day. And then we managed to get a signal through to the outfitter and said, hey, come get us. Because that day, like from early morning until late that night, like we're on the water for 10 hours, maybe. I don't know. But it was windy and rain. Like, my rain jacket gave up, and it was a brand new $250
rain jacket.
One or
the other, either the rain or the wind.
Yeah.
Right?
But I was soaked through and through, and it was just like everybody was just miserable. And so we were in rain at one point. The rain was so heavy, we were bailing the canoe.
Yeah.
It was coming down. There was like 3 or 4 inches in the bottom of the canoe.
You don't really mind that in midsummer.
Yeah.
But when you're getting closer, I mean, beginning of the season and end of the season when
hypothermic,
it starts getting cooler and everything dries as fast. And
so this was August.
Yeah.
Was it August?
Yeah,
it was
still August. Okay.
August, September. But yeah, it was so much rain. Like I was... I guess by the end of the day, I was disappointed that my brand new rain jacket didn't keep out the rain, but I wasn't really surprised because it did rain so hard.
Everything. There's going to come a point where, unless you're wearing a dry suit,
I was soaking wet.
Yeah. Ah, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But no, you don't want to be every single trip out nothing but rain. bad weather and thunderstorms. Yeah. And there comes a point when there's so much thunder and lightning, you're just like, you know what? I'm just going to paddle out there and hold up a metal rod. End it now, baby.
At the end of that day, which was supposed to be the second to the last day, when we found the campsite that we wanted, we had an estimated area of where we wanted to end up. And we pulled ashore and climbed up the trail and found the campsite. And there wasn't too many flat spots, mostly a lot of rock, a few. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that was kind of like considered a flat spot was a pool of water.
Yeah.
And it was like,
been there, done that.
We can't stay here. I just can't do it.
I was on, I think it was the Nipissing, and there was one campsite. I think, I'm going to make that my last campsite of the day. And then again, it's just one quick portage and then you're out sort of deal. And that site had not been used.
Oh.
I mean, the trees were growing up out of it. The tall grasses were taller than growing up out of it. There was nowhere to put. I mean, you had to flatten everything down.
Yeah.
I got up there looking around. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm not really that far from the truck. It's going to be just as much work to get to my truck as it is to carve out a place to camp. So I just walked back to my canoe, jumped in, and toodly-dooed around.
Well, when we decided to drag it in, I says, no, enough is enough. Like, we had dragged the canoes ashore. We had dragged all of our gear up into the campsite. We had installed a tarp for waterproofing, and the tarp was up. We were standing in water, and all the gear was there, and we just, like, now what? Because there's a moment of no rain, and then we just kind of, I don't know who's, like, we just kind of, somebody said, well, you know.
It just takes that once.
Yeah, I know, and it was just like, you know what, this is not going to be a pleasant night. Because there's no dry spots. We're going to have to set the tents up on rock.
Yeah.
And so we just dragged everything back down to the canoes.
You know what? Sleeping, getting your sleep on a big heavy-duty canoe trip is so important. Oh, yeah.
Big
time. If you get a couple, I mean, you can deal with a bad night of sleep or something like that.
But yeah.
If it's all bad and you're just like
miserable,
miserable and you're wet and you just can't get comfortable and you're constantly thinking about, well, I know I'm right next to a puddle and it's going to get bigger and you roll over and your hand comes out feeling the edge of the tent, make sure there's not a pool of water there. You're just not fully sleeping sort of deal, right? Tell me you don't relate, right?
I recall a trip. I was sleeping in a hammock. It was a trip down the Petawawa and my canoe pack had a small hole in it. And I had stuffed my sleeping bag into another bag inside the leaky canoe pack. And my pillow got wet. I had one of those inflatable pillows, so it didn't take much to dry. But my sleeping bag, the lower 2 feet of the sleeping bag was soaking wet. So
your feet.
I was in the sleeping bag, and I had to curl into a fetal ball to keep my feet out of the wet spot.
Yeah.
And then by morning, like as I got warmer and warmer, I would slide my feet slowly into the wet sleeping bag. By morning, the sleeping bag had dried just by my body heat driving it out. But it took all night. It was constantly waking me up. It's like I would move in the sleeping bag, and it's like, oh, the wet spot. Like, it was soaking wet down by the... I had wrung it out, and I managed to twist water out of the sleeping bag.
I don't think I've ever had a big issue with a wet sleeping bag. It's more the wet inside the tent sort of thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, or like you're...
A leaky tent.
You're in the tent, and I remember at McGregor with a family. Like, the rain came down so heavy one night. Well, it chased the raccoons away. That was good. But I remember in the middle of the night, it woke us up. And it's like, what's that sound? Is there train tracks nearby? And it sounded like a freight train coming towards us. It got louder and louder and louder. Suddenly, it was like thunder and lightning and heavy sheets of rain. A tree came down and landed in the neighboring campsite. And I remember tapping the floor of the tent and going, tuk, tuk, tuk. It felt like, oh, we have a waterbed. That's a novel item. But it was just like no water came into the tent.
It was all underneath.
But it was underneath, and you could pat the bottom, and it was like a waterbed.
When me and my buddy Kevin were up on Cedar, and that lightning strike hit tree in the top of it came down through our tent.
Yeah.
And then we threw the tarp over top for the night. And then you're sitting there all night going, is the tarp leaking? No, we're still dry. And then you have a quick few minutes sleep, and you wake up. Is it? Tent leaking? No, we're still dry. And then it was like a whole night. And then you wake up in the morning going, I don't think I slept at all.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you just feel miserable. Yeah. Your eyes are burning. It's like, oh.
Yeah. And we do this why?
It's fun, right?
It's fun. What are those, like seven different types of fun or something like that? Yeah, it's groovy, baby. Groovy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, weather. What are you going to do?
But when it's good, it's good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
There's just a few. And, you know, it's like maybe 1% of the time out there can be terrible. But for the rest of it, it's like, oh, so you sit around and have a rain delay. Yeah. Sit under a tarp and you chat, you carve, you play cards or whatever.
Well, we were on bikes. There was four of us, I think, out on Bice Lake in Algonquin. And Marcus Rubino, Mark in the Park.
Yep.
Him and I were there, and he was getting a bit grumpity. And he goes, you know, I didn't come here to sit under a tarp because it was raining. It had been, like, always raining.
He's always grumpy.
And he's always grumpy. So I said, well, let's go out fishing then.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the fish bite in the rain.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't raining that hard. So we jumped into the canoe and went out and did some trolling and stuff and looking for some lake trout and whatnot. And then the rain started. So we both, like, kneeling on the bottom. We were just giving it back to camp. We got there. We were soaked. But, you know, but I always find if, you know, most of the time the weather, you know, you're paddling, is a nice day sort of deal and you're enjoying yourself. The hottest days, for some reason, I'm always on a river trip. And there's no shade. There is no escape from the sun at all.
Gosh darn it.
Right? Because you're sitting there going, oh, yeah, all right, the tree's up there. Well, the looks like the river bends into the tree. No, the river goes the other way.
Yeah.
It's just a fake bend and then totally goes away from the trees.
There's only enough trees to stop the breeze.
Right?
So there's like, no wind.
There's no wind. Sun. Yeah. Yeah, not a cloud in the sky. Nice blue sky. And
yeah.
The sun has just kicked it up a notch.
And there's so many S-turns, you have to work extra hard just to steer the canoe and keep
apparently
it in the
no weather is good enough for us.
Exactly.
It's too hot. It's too cold. It's too dry. It's too wet.
I need a Goldilocks trip.
Oh, I tell you. Now, mind you, August in San Diego, their weather's like perfect.
Yeah?
Yeah. So this August, we're going to San Diego to paddle. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting out and doing a lot of paddling this year. You got a few big trips planned, too. So
I'm going to do a whole bunch of weekend trips. I'm going to start, you know how you would take Mackenzie and Ariana out on weekend trips and stuff like that? I'm going to start doing that this year with
just
the kids.
Even if it's just overnighters to get them used to it, right? Yeah, that gets the bug into them.
Just get them just one-on-one type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not the whole family.
Nope.
Right?
Nope.
And we're also planning. Beckett doesn't like to walk or hike, and Stella does. So we're planning a trip. We're going to go to Rain Lake, and me and Beckett are going to canoe camp, and Stella and Siobhan are going to hike camp, and we're going to meet up on a couple of the campsites along the way.
Right.
Figure it out because some of the hiking, what is it, Western Uplands or whatever it is, whatever the trail is that goes into Rain Lake. So we're going to try and meet up on the trail once or twice, but otherwise it's like me and Beckett on the water part of it and Stella and Siobhan on the hiking route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? We used to do stuff like that. It's just, you know what, Tracy, you get one of the kids for the day and I'm taking a kid for the day or I'm going for a couple of days or sort of deal. And then, when they got older, it would be, okay, well, you know, Mackenzie and I are going in for, you know, a few days, and then Ariana and I are going in for a few days, and then Tracy and I would go in for a few days, which is really cool that they all got to get into the park, but made it cooler was I got to go in three times.
There you go.
I don't know if they ever caught on. Wait a minute. Yeah. We get one trip, he gets three. Yeah. How does that work out? You know, but no, I want to do a lot of that paddling and even local stuff, right? I mean, get your kids out local, even.
Oh, exactly, yes.
Right?
Yep.
Like, Ariana loves going up Duffins Creek.
Yeah, so I'm also cautious about that. Like, I wish I had a second canoe because it's a pain in the butt with having to be overly cautious about. Lake Ontario water has a lot of zebra mussels in it, and I don't want to be transferring that into Algonquin and whatever. So I wish I had a second boat, Algonquin boat and a Lake Ontario boat. So what I tend not to do is I tend not to let my canoe go into Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
So
I do. Just give it a wash.
Yeah, it's just the gunnels are the aluminum, extruded aluminum, so there's pockets inside them. It's really hard to keep the stuff out of the gunnels.
You know, there's only so far you can, right?
Yeah.
So you either do the best you can or just give it up altogether. Well, so I do the best I can.
I do have the kayak.
Yeah.
And so maybe I'll save the kayak for just Lake Ontario stuff. And
the canoe. Well, that's where I do all my kayaking is Lake Ontario.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Dun, 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 dun. Or just go buy yourself a new canoe.
So there's a lot of canoes on the market now. I'm seeing more and more show up. Everybody is everybody's starting to get rid of their COVID canoes. So, yeah.
Just no one's getting rid of like a 17, 18 footer.
Yeah, I know. I need a larger three-seater canoe.
You know what? I still say you got to get one of your kids paddling in the back. Stella would probably be.
So Stella is just about the point where she, like the power person is up front, right? So the stern person needs to know how to steer. So I think she's not a very good engine. So, but she could, she's cluing in a lot with the paddle strokes that I think she could be a good stern person, right?
See? Now's the time to get her going.
But then that leaves Siobhan, who can't do stern, and Beckett, who can't paddle at all, in the other
canoe. So,
you guys are staying home.
You either learn, you pick up the slack, or you're staying home.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Here's the rules.
Yeah.
Paddling 2024.
And I'm sure if I got on them right away, but I tend to do everything for them. So when we do go camping, they can just sit there and.
Yeah, you got to stop that. Yeah. I've really had to stop doing that sort of stuff. Like now Tracy's at the point where she knows, okay, when we get to camp, we got to do this and we got to do this and we got to do this. So if I start something, she now knows, oh, I'm going to go do this.
Exactly.
Stay out of Sean's way. Yeah. I'm going to go get this done. Or I'm going to go do this, go do this. And, you know, oh, you need help with that? Yeah, we'll go do this. And that sort of deal. And everything gets done.
It's nice to be out camping with an experienced crew. And so like when you get out there with people who have been doing it for years and years, things just seem to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I got to do dishes now. Oh, somebody's already doing them. Right. And so it's really nice.
I'm going to pour myself a drink. Hey.
Exactly. So it's nice to have experienced crews out there of people who are just always thinking a couple steps ahead. And it's like, so you're either ahead of them or they're ahead of you and stuff just gets happening.
Well, right? the big thing that I find with going with a group of experienced people is seeing how people hang tarps differently.
Yeah.
And also when you've got a weird, weird campsite where nothing seems to line up tree wise.
Yeah.
So where are we going to, okay, this is where we want the tarp. Where are we going to put our ropes? And then we'll tie this one here. Yeah. And everybody sits there and looks at it. And like somebody goes, no, this, try this one here. And then we'll go there. And everybody's like, oh yeah, that works.
Yeah.
And then we do that. And somebody else, and then we all, you're right, and then change.
Yeah, so it is interesting. Everybody gets their put their math hat on and trying to figure, okay, if we string the rope this way, that way, and this and that, and we have a center pole and this, that, the other thing.
Well, my thing has always been I've never used to hang a tarp over the fire. Because I didn't want the sparks coming up and hitting the tarp, and you know, especially if you got a good expensive tarp, right? That's usually why if I'm going to put some, if I know it's raining, I'll bring one of those blue tarps and hang over the fire because it can get as many burn holes as it wants, right?
And we did that at when we went to Moon River. Was it last fall or the fall before? So when we went to Moon River, I think it was a Scott's tarp. It was just one of those cheap blue tarps, hung it right over the fire, had it in ice and high, so the you know, we keep the rain off us, but the fire never touched it, right?
Yeah, well, and that's it. That's exactly it. It's, like I said, I was always, you know, keep everything away from the fire, don't put anything, because you see the sparks go up, and, you know, all that sort of. But it's gotten to the point over the years, like, okay, you know what, I'm going to put just maybe the corner or just the edge, so it's covered.
Yeah.
You know,
so I can stand at the fire in the rain,
or I can stand under the under the tarp, you know, by the fire, and the fire's not getting soaked. But you know, it's at least all the sparks aren't going straight up, and the smoke's not staying underneath the tarp, and because I've had that happen before too.
Oh yeah,
you're sitting there, and then it's getting kind of smoky in here. Is anybody else's eyes bothering them?
Yeah. Right? What's going on?
You really learn a lot from people that like you say, experienced trippers that you've never mm-hmm. tripped with before.
Yeah.
You know, they bring different things to the table than you do. And the good thing is that sometimes you pick up some good
exactly.
tips yep. then, and tricks. Oh, I never thought about
even
that.
Even now, after 25 years of, yeah. of tripping, it's like I still go out and it's with somebody new and it's like, oh, that's really interesting mm-hmm. way you did that. I never would have thought of that. I've never seen it before.
One of the things is I was, how am I going to hang this? And then I went with, I can't remember who it was, but they had a couple of bungee straps, like the bungee, the stretchy bungee yep. with the hooks on the end.
Yeah.
They wrapped one around the tree and hooked it onto itself. So it was around the tree. And then it left that one hook hanging down that you could hang stuff
yeah,
off
yeah,
of.
Yeah.
Why didn't I think of that? The simplest thing. Like,
yeah.
how do you not think of that?
Yes.
Right? So, yeah, you find all these little tips and tricks that other mm-hmm. people have. And it's one of the benefits of paddling with other people, right?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of smart people out there.
Yeah, a lot of smarties using those smarticle particles. That's not actually what we were going to talk about today.
But, totally got sidetracked.
Yeah, totally.
How did we get on that topic?
We didn't even get, because we're talking about doing all the paddling we're doing trips and stuff like that. Don't get us back on that topic. Yeah, I mean, usually we have our list of topics and go left and right, but this time we didn't even get to the topic. We just entered the room and made a complete left. I got sent this one by you first thing this morning, and then by about 20 other people after. Hey, have you guys seen this? And which is pretty cool. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
So the Arctic Cowboys, big news. They were up for 45 charges each from their Northwest Passage trip last year.
And so, for a history for people who are unfamiliar with it. The Arctic Cowboys, when they did their Northwest Passage route, they got forced onto Bylot Island, which is a protected bird sanctuary. And so they didn't intend to be where they were, but there was a huge ice floe came and pushed them ashore. They had to go ashore to get out of the ice crush. And so because they had permission to have a shotgun for protection because of the polar bears, they got charged all these charges, like
45 of them,
45 each.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the charges are very similar. Like there's like 13 of this charge for one person, for each person is 13 of this one, and then 15 of another, and yada, yada, yada. So it was just as a result of where they happened to be on Bylot Island.
Yeah. So they had their court date and their Monday.
Was early January.
Yeah,
January. They got delayed into, this week.
Well, this week.
Yeah.
So I guess they all got into the old courtroom there. One of the lawyers was present.
Yeah.
The other three were
lawyers
on.
There. The other three individuals had theirs on Zoom.
On the Zoom there. And I guess they came in, the prosecution came in and said, all charges have been dropped.
With no...
No explanation that they're giving out.
Yeah, they didn't give out an explanation. They just said all charges dropped.
Crown Prosecutor Chris McCarthy withdrew charges against all four of them. The four kayakers facing 45 charges each relating to events alleged to have occurred at the Bylot Island Migratory Bird Sanctuary near Pond Inlet during a months-long paddling trip.
82 days?
Yeah,
something like that.
Among the withdrawn charges were the contrary to the Canadian National Parks Act and Migratory Bird Convention Act, were possessing a firearm in a bird sanctuary and entering a restricted area of a park. So all these things. So defense lawyer Allison Crow was present. Of course, that's Wes Hansen's lawyer.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of varying opinions on this. And, I mean, one of the people say if you're, because they call themselves the Arctic Cowboys.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, if you're going to call yourself that, you got to expect some backlash. It's like,
come on. That's what people are saying. And of course, Arctic Cowboys. They're from the States. Oh, that shit.
Mm.
It's like, you know what, guy? Like, you're showing your bias. You're showing the bias, the stereotype, all that. Yeah. You have no clue what's going on because nothing was actually said, right? And all that came out. So, and of course, now today it's you know, like, do you guys beep when you backpedal like this?
I know.
You're seeing this at all. Yeah. Hey, you know, and I mean, we said, like, we weren't going to, we had our opinions.
But we kept
we were wondering what was going on, yeah. And it just didn't seem right. And no one knows the full exactly. deal unless one of them, you know, they come out and say it. They did not say in court why the Crown was withdrawing the charges. Natalie Houle, a spokesperson for Public Prosecution Services in Canada, said in an email that the Crown has no further comment on the case. And the lawyer Crow said she wasn't expecting the case to end Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
So she wasn't even expecting it. She shows up there and they say, yeah, we're trying. It's the Crown's discretion to proceed with prosecuting charges, and in this case, it's possible they didn't see a reasonable chance of conviction,
exactly. she says. Well, honestly, they were forced onto Bylot in an emergency situation due to high winds and ice floes.
Now, just chats I had with people today, one of the things was, A, it's a whole political thing.
Yes.
Or B, somebody was just trying to make a name for themselves.
Well, make a name, but also, I think, send a message. Because what this will do, it'll... Anybody who's playing a trip like this, business is going to happen more and more. Mm-hmm. Once you get one person to do it, like, look, you get the train of people going up Everest, right?
Yep.
So what I think this was a, well, this is a first of a kind. Let's test the waters. Let's put the message out there. Like, just like, you know, you park a cop car on the side of the 401... traffic's going to slow down.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, yeah, and I can see that because once somebody does it,
mm-hmm.
right? We took 83 days to do it. Well, I can do it in 75, right? Yeah, so then all of a sudden becomes, you know, like you say, that line going up Everest. Yeah.
So now people, when they plan it in the future, and they're going to plan it, people are going to do this more and more.
They're going to know.
They're going to say, oh, let's do a bit more research, make sure we know where we're going to be, what we're going to do, make sure we have all the permits for... And well, so West, when he got the license for carrying his shotgun... It's a permit, a parks permit, a national parks permit that allows you to carry the weapon, but you can't carry the weapon and the ammunition together.
And it can't be loaded.
And it cannot be loaded. It has to be separate. Just like in a home, you can't store a rifle or whatever in the same cabinet as ammunition.
Ammunition, yeah.
Right? So same thing, but for me, it's like... What if there's a polar bear coming at you? It's like, okay, you grab that bag over there where the ammo is, and you grab that bag over there where...
Mr. Polar Bear, can you just, like, hang on a second until we're ready?
Load this thing.
Time out. Just like we're kids playing tag.
It might be nerve-wracking, but that was specifically stated in his carry permit for his shotgun.
So it'd be interesting to see if they ever actually release why they just dropped the charges. Mm-hmm. But like I say, in the discussions I had today, the ongoing sort of theme was there was something going on behind the scenes that somebody was trying to
send a message
or, you know. Mm-hmm. And like I say, the a lot of people now all of a sudden today are, shouldn't have gone that far and... I can't believe they actually trying to charge them.
It's amazing how somebody, all these keyboard warriors can be instant experts in the background. And it's like, I know what I'm doing. I know this. Well, some guy was on one of the, Nunavisic website. It was the guy was saying, polar bears can run at 80 kilometers an hour. It's like, no. So
there was that whole debate about polar bears, black bears, and grizzly bears, and the speeds. And then they say, well, if a cheetah can run this, what does that have to do with anything?
So all these internet experts,
right?
It's like, for one, get your facts straight, because all it takes is a quick Google to know that, like, I did Google it, and according to the internet, Google, a bear, like typically a grizzly bear, can short sprints of 40 kilometers an hour. Yeah. But they can do a steady 20 kilometers an hour. And so it's like, but apparently polar bears can do 80? No.
Yeah.
But, you know, this guy's an expert.
Maybe they're special polar bears. Maybe. With rocket packs.
Yeah.
But I mean, even when this first all came out, like, people were making all these comments. Well, you know, what are they going to do about the birds they killed?
They weren't hunting.
Well, and that's whatever. Where did you read that? So, yeah, people are just throwing crap out there to see what sticks.
Yeah,
right?
It was protection. They just needed a way to, if they're in their tent at night and a polar bear comes looking for a tent taco, there's a way to scare off the bear.
Right? So, all charges dropped, and yeah. To Allison Crowe, the defense lawyer, says, "We have a very reasonable Crown office here, and I thank the Crown for their decision."
Yes.
And I'm sure the kayakers do as well.
It's unfortunate that this bit of a black mark is on the expedition.
Yeah.
But I don't think it doesn't lessen their achievement. They still
achieved. Nope. It's a great achievement. Yep. That's for sure. Something else you sent me beyond that, the helium balloon.
I did send that to you.
You sent me the thing about a helium balloon. So apparently there's I don't know if it's a YouTube thing or what. there is an episode of Failure is an Option from Outside Watch. The host, former aircraft engineer Brendan Carberry, set out to find if attaching a heavy-duty helium balloon to a backpack could lighten his load. Of course, the whole thing being, like, there's only so much that you can shave off the weight of what goes
exactly.
in your backpack.
You still have to carry stuff.
You still have to carry stuff. I mean, you got better fabrics. They're lighter fabrics. Yeah. But unless you're going naked, you still need those fabrics.
Yeah.
You can cut off, you know, the most of your toothbrush handle, but you still exactly. need a toothbrush sort of deal, right? So he figured out, how can I get this lighter? What if we were to get one of those big helium balloons and tie it to your pack?
40 pounds of lift and a 40-pound pack? Neutral buoyancy?
Right. So he did it, and he had this thing, and it worked, but
he's got a giant balloon above his head.
Well, you know what? That would be good if somebody was looking for him.
Yeah.
Not so good if you're going through the woods.
No.
Right?
He's like, watch out for that tree.
So, of course, my thing is portage gear.
Yes.
Now, number one, you're going to have this big helium balloon constantly, because it's not like you're bringing a helium balloon tank.
Yeah.
You know, because that just sort of defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah.
So you're going to have this big helium balloon.
The
whole time. But if you could tie it to your backpack and stuff to help lift.
Yeah.
To go across the portage, you'd need a couple of big ones.
Yes.
But then you could attach them one to the stern and one to the bow of your canoe and help take some of the weight off your canoe while portaging.
When I was looking at that, so if you had a whitewater canoe or whatever with the buoyancy bags, you fill the buoyancy bags with helium.
Right?
it'll take off a couple pounds.
And see, if you got a nice, lightweight canoe with one, you know, you get these canoes that are like 25 pounds.
Yeah.
And you got a 40-pound helium balloon, you should be able to technically walk that canoe along the portage like a dog. Just put a rope on it and pull it along behind you.
It'd be a really neat way to do whitewater because you're hovering above.
Right?
Yeah, I'm above this class three.
I'm going right off the edge of a waterfall, and I'm just going to keep on going straight.
I'm doing Niagara Falls.
That's a 150-foot waterfall I just went off of, and now I'm 150 feet in the air. That's awesome.
Just watch out for people with BB guns.
Right.
No.
Oh. Uh-oh. Get a little like Wile E. Coyote sign.
Yes. Help. Help.
If you Google failure is an option from Outside Watch and helium balloon ultralight backpacking, you're going to find this little video. And that's a humorous little thing. I don't think would actually work. But
no.
Let me tell you, this guy's got the same kind of brain I got. That's all I'm saying. Let's talk about another really nasty couple of things here. Few people have got their panties in a knot over this one.
Oh, yes.
There was a forest order 09092402 for the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Effective March 1st to November 30th each year, except while being prepared, consumed on or under on-site visual observance, all food, food containers, scented items such as soap, lip balm, toothpaste, and refuse shall be suspended at least 12 feet above the surface of the ground, not less than 6 feet horizontally from the trunk of a tree, or stored in an interagency grizzly bear committee certified bear-resistant container. Number one, I didn't realize there was an agency for that.
Yeah, I didn't know either. And they're very prescriptive.
Mm-hmm.
Like lip balm. If you're not actively using lip balm, it has to be up in a tree.
Yep.
It's like, yep.
Your toiletries should be in your up there as well, right? You don't want any food items or anything with scent, deodorants, toothpaste, soaps, anything like that in your tent. Because
mm-hmm.
a bear smells it and goes, hello, what's that smell? I don't recognize it. The following persons are exempt from this order. Persons with a written Forest Service authorization specifically exempting them from the effect of this order.
Who would get that exemption?
That seems pretty broad to me. Any federal, state, or local officer or member of an organized rescue or firefighting resource in the performance of an official duty. Order will be effective April 19th, 2024, and shall remain until April 19th, 2026, or until rescinded, whichever occurs first. Any violation of this prohibition is punishable as a Class B misdemeanor by a fine of not more than $5,000 for individuals and $10,000 for organizations.
That's a lot.
Right? Or by imprisonment for not more than 6 months. Or both! So fine or prison or both.
So what you got to do is somebody either has to be brushing their teeth or actively eating for the food to be out of the tree.
Right.
Okay. The bag's down. Somebody start eating crackers.
Start eating.
Start sucking.
It's got to be in your,
you,
in
eat
your
some
sight.
Chips.
It's got to be in your observance.
Yeah.
Right. Now, this is just Boundary Waters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Superior National Forest, Boundary Waters, Canoe Area Wilderness, Bear Safety Order has been updated. Similar orders in previous years have been issued in response to bear-human interactions, but the intent of this order is to prevent those interactions from occurring by mandating bear-aware behaviors in regions known to have significant risks of interactions. And people say, you know, well, they used to do it lake specific and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well now areas. They're just doing the whole
blanket.
Thing.
Yeah.
All the Boundary Waters.
Mm-hmm.
So of course this now said, you know, they've issued an update to the forest order that all food containers and scented items be stored just to prevent the bear human interactions. They point out that once a bear is rewarded with human food or garbage, it's likely to become habituated and continue the behavior, which could ultimately lead the bear to being dispatched, which no one wants to see.
Oh.
There is a map on the Boundary Waters, with the forest national Superior National Forest site that has the map of where the area is and which area is designated as hanging mandatory. There is a little bit of a question and answer thing, like a frequently asked questions, like why was March included? This is a significant variation from year to year as seasonal weather transitions. Since bears have been known to come out of hibernation as early in March, they set it to March 1st. How did this Forest Service let the public know about the changes? Mandatory to hang or have a certified container. Dozens of people, different organizations and everything have put these things out. And anybody that has to administer a permit, anybody providing education and all that, they will let everybody know. And of course, people are saying, well, how come, you know, they're with the trees and stuff like that, not enough trees to do it. And maybe you guys should be going back there and putting hanging poles and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they say we cannot install permanent structures within a federally designated wilderness without justification. if it became necessary to prevent damage to the area, that may provide justification. But our first tool is educating our visitors and changing our behaviors to mitigate that risk. The biggest thing that I've heard about from all of this coming out, I mean, there's a couple of people out there, one in particular who shall remain nameless, who's going right off the handle on this, right off the bat, saying, you know, this is garbage. We shouldn't have to be doing this. There's other, you know, a lot of people are saying, like, why? Because I go to sites here all the time, and good luck in finding a tree to hang your thing off. And, you know, what's the difference between tying it to a tree out in the back of the woods? Well, the bear is going to find it no matter what. Hmm. Hanging it from the tree is going to make it a little bit harder for the bear. Putting it beside or tying it to a tree is probably going to make it a lot easier for the bear.
Yes.
But, you know what? Like, then you're looking at all these things, and a lot of people, which surprised me, are basically just coming out going, what's with all the drama?
Hmm.
It's a rule they're putting into place. Follow the rules or don't go.
Yep.
Like 90% of the comments I saw were along that line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a lot of people saying up here in Canada, that's how we've been raised.
Yes.
You hang your food.
Yeah.
Right. So I can't speak for south of the border, but yeah, I've since I started, I was taught hang your food. Get it out as far as you can and as high as you can. Yes, a bear can climb a tree. Yes, if he's that determined, he's going to get your food.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. At least you hung it. You gave him a challenge. You know, you're not just leaving it out there for him to get. And of course, there's the other people bringing in that. Well, this is what happens when you don't. You don't get to go hunting bears, and they stop the bear hunt.
Yeah, I don't understand that conversation.
You know what?
This is not
apples
about hunting.
And oranges and all of that.
Pick your argument.
So if you are going to the boundary waters, make sure you are taking a certified container.
Yep.
There's ERSACs,
there's bear containers, there's...
Yeah, there's certain ERSACs.
Yes.
I guess there are certain
approved
models.
Yes.
Yeah. So brush up on those. Do your research first and before you go. Or, like I say, do what I do. I just bring a pulley with two ropes, and that way I can haul it up because I just throw the pulley over, and I'm not doing any wear and tear on the tree itself. Right?
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that happened. But sticking with the boundary waters, there is a bill that could reverse the 20-year ban on mining leases in the boundary waters that has now passed the U.S. House and will soon move on to the Senate. Of course, environmental advocates are expressing concern over this. Over the reversal of mining leases that could impact watershed in the region, initiated by Congressman Pete Stauber, H.R. 3195 would reverse Public Land Order 7917, which withdraws 225,504 acres of the Superior National Forest for 20 years. Furthermore, it would require a reissuance of every mineral lease in the Superior National Forest.
They're so back and forth on this.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is, you know what? This was gone through, put into place, nothing for 20 years.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden it's going back the other way.
Cancel that.
What a waste of time and money. There's so many other things that could be. Anyway, instead of flat out rejecting any mining project from development, the Duluth complex located within the Superior National Forest, it's important to allow project-specific reviews that are based on facts and science to take place. My legislation will remove the obstacles put in place by the Biden administration, allowing our skilled miners to prove that they are ready to safely deliver Minnesota's mineral wealth to the nation using the best environmental and labor standards in the world, he says. Stauber. He represents Minnesota's 8th Congressional District, which covers the northeastern part of Minnesota.
This is all about money.
You know why?
So the mining industry has deep pockets, and politicians have very willing pockets. So if you spread enough money around, the politicians go, sure, I'll help you with this.
It is important to allow project-specific review. So who's the one that decides?
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that's that it benefits. So that's coming back through again. I just when you thought it was safe to go back into Boundary Waters waters, apparently not.
Yeah, it's changing again.
You know, it may change again. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. Don't know where they're coming or going over there.
Yeah, was it even like the last time we talked about this? Was it even like 6 months ago or even?
Not even.
Like
not
we
even.
Had said, oh yeah, it's banned again. We're woo-hoo! So happy.
Everybody was all hooping yeah. and hollering and
protecting the park.
Yeah, and then now they're right back out there. You know, I mean, we have the same thing. I look at the Canadian government that happens, and you look at stuff that they do, and they argue about it, goes this way, that way, da, da, da. Finally, they make the decision, boom, boom, it passes. Okay, that's good. And then, wait a minute, 6 months later, why are you guys discussing this again?
I know, right?
We just did all, what a waste of time and taxpayers' money. Like, have you ever watched Question Period?
Yeah,
they spend more time arguing back and forth about the most useless seeing crap.
Who can get the best point or the best quote. Yeah. Hey, say this so that we can put it on YouTube.
It's ridiculous. Like, I don't know how anything gets done, you know? And everybody just sits there and prevents the other side from doing anything good.
Yeah.
And then when it gets switched around, that just goes the other way.
Yeah.
Politicians. Hey, if you can't trust politicians, who can you trust? The first official canoe trail in the south of Scotland has just launched, covering a 30-mile stretch of the majestic River Tweed. So if you're looking to go to Scotland to do some paddling, this is up your alley.
And it's open.
River Tweed doesn't just run through the Scottish border regions. In its lower reaches, the river itself forms the border, the Anglo-Scottish divide, tracing the twists and turns of the Tweed for 17 miles. This has loosely been the case since the Battle of Carrum in 1018. That's a couple of years ago.
Just a few.
Where Malcolm II of Scotland defeated Uhtred, the English ruler of Bamber. It has legally been the case since the 1237 Treaty of York, agreed between Henry III of England and Alexander II of Scotland. Battles have been won and lost in that time, but the border hasn't budged much since. The new Tweed Valley Canoe Trail officially opened May 1st, covers 30-mile stretch of the river from the hamlet of Stowbow to Abbotsford, stately home of Sir Walter Scott.
Oh, there you go.
Famous author. Route runs purely through Scottish waters, roughly 60 miles west of where the river becomes a shared waterway. It's the first official canoe route to open in the south of Scotland, waymarked and mapped, and it travels through a landscape shaped by Scottish history. So if you're a history buff.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because that's what we've always talked about. Is like, it's cool to paddle around and see things on the shore. I mean, you like to be out in the wilderness, but you like to do, I mean, something, especially over there, they got the castles and stuff. You know, it'd be like...
That'd be amazing,
right? Along the river, a castle was first built on the site of Needpath around 1190. One early owner, Sir Simon Fraser... No, that's Jamie Fraser from Outlander. Fought beside William Wallace and later met the same grisly fate. Didn't they get drawn and quartered?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. What's that when they cut them open and draw their... Yeah, I guess that's drawn and quartered. Yeah.
So I wonder if this Simon Fraser is the same Simon Fraser that emigrated to Canada and there's Simon Fraser University and...
Nope, I think this is a different guy.
Just coincidence?
Yeah, just coincidence, because this guy was dead.
Okay.
His head ended up on a spike on London Bridge.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm thinking, no.
Nope.
Unless he's weird that way.
Yeah, he didn't make it out alive.
This. Well, they didn't say what happened to his body, so maybe it came to Canada, but his head stayed on a pike in London. Current sublime rubber-built tower... dates to the late 14th century, is perhaps most notable for the crumbly corner. The upper stories of one wing have collapsed after an attack from Oliver Cromwell. This article has a whole lot of name dropping.
Oh, yes. Yeah. In a lot of years.
Right? In 1650. Oh, so we've gone from like 1018 to 1650. Yeah. It has won more than 100 fortified peel towers. built in the borders during the period to serve as watchtowers. So you're paddling along, and you're seeing these things as it's pretty cool history, right? One torch lit a signal fire like the beacons of Gondor in the Lord of the Rings. The other followed suit. That'd be cool. Could you imagine getting a whole bunch of your buddies up there and just do that? People wouldn't know what to do. Trail is designed to be paddled over 2 long or 3 shorter days, either self-guided or by a guide. Craig Kerr runs bigger adventures and has been guiding tours on the Tweed for more than a decade. He says canoeing gives you a new perspective on a familiar landscape, and it's always different. The whole of the River Tweed now doubles as a wildlife corridor, not just for salmon, squeaking oyster catchers, herons, cormorants. They're all regular things. He says, I once watched an osprey dive down to catch a fish.
Would be fascinating to see that, eh?
Right? Yeah, we've just seen them flying around and landing on things, but we don't actually... It's rare that you get to actually see one. Some of the things they talk about here in day one... you end up at this ex-textile town where mountain bike trails share signposts, listed historic sites. You can check out Dirty Brewing, D-U-R-T-Y.
Dirty.
Where each beer is named after a local biking route. Day two, a much shorter second day in the canoe, gives you time to climb Pym Hill on the outskirts of town. Summit of the hill is a 2,000-year-old fort complex.
Wow.
Okay, so we've gone back to before 1018 now. In its center is a ring of carved stone panels depicting the history of the area from Romans and Celtic monks to mighty Tweed salmon and the mills once so prevalent. Across the water is Scotland's oldest inhabited house, Truncare. House?
Truckware.
Dates to 1107, has been visited by the 27 Scottish kings and queens in that time. The Stuarts of Truncware were fervent Jacobites, even hosting Bonnie Prince Charlie during the Jacobite uprising of 1745. Like, this is all history. Mm-hmm. I'm sure this is a giant episode of the Outlander.
Yes, so, well, they talk about the Jacobite
uprising. Oh, yeah, all of this stuff. Day two, the water trail has you paddling past Plora Woods native oak woodland, today a rarity in the borders. With current help you along, the paddling becomes meditative and methodical, with forestry, farmlands, and the ruins of old peel towers coming and going with the river bends. That'd be cool.
It would be paddling amazing. Paddling
around, you see, like, the big oak trees and stuff like
history,
that.
History
And then all of a sudden, there's an old peel tower, an old stone guard. Oh, that'd be. I wonder how many times paddling this you would get out just to explore that tower.
Yeah.
And how many of these would you finally? You know what? That's enough.
I can only see so many.
Day two ends among wild garlic and daffodils near Peel, where they're near where the 500-year-old Glenkinnon oak stands.
Wow. 500-year-old
tree. 500-year-old oak tree. Day three, the paddling takes you 7 miles to Sir Walter Scott's legendary country house. It's a day of rapids, the most notable of which came beneath the scenic stone Fernley Bridge, built back in 1764. At the end of the day, the Scots baronial architecture of Abbotsford comes into view, sprawling along the banks of the Tweed, with fairy tale turrets pointed to the sky. The sight means the trail is at an end. You can cross Galliford Bridge and explore Scott's famous house. You can go there or his home, and you can go there and check things out. It's hard to overstate the impact the writer had on Scotland, and indeed the impact the Tweed had on Scott. It was a love affair he had with the river, and with this idea that it encapsulated the borders. Scott helped set up the River Tweed Commission, the body still responsible for the health of the river today. It's part of his legacy that we can enjoy it today. Tweed continues east from Abbotsford before it flows into the North Sea. Its cultural tributaries stretch far and wide through Scotland. That sounds like an awesome
water trail. That would be an amazing trip.
So where'd you go for the weekend?
So
we went to Scotland.
It mention campgrounds?
No, No, it did not.
So it is a trail.
Yeah.
But can you camp along it?
Well, it doesn't really say. It says that you end up at these towns. So I'm thinking maybe you gotta stay
Airbnb,
at
Airbnb, breakfast,
something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
But that's pretty cool.
That would be amazing.
Right?
So it's a long trip to get there, but...
But, I mean, if you're going to Scotland...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All the
yeah.
things you can see and do there, and then you just take, like, 3 days to mm-hmm. float down a river.
Yeah. Oh, that is so interesting.
So, what... Craig Kerr, K-E-R-R, Bigger B-I-G-G-A-R Adventures. Give him a shout if you're interested in doing something. Set up a tour,
mm-hmm.
a guided tour on the Tweed. I wonder if he can do some fishing along the way.
Yeah, I wonder, eh?
Right?
I'd be so interested in looking at all the old, you know, the construction, you know, thousand-year-old construction,
When you live over there and you see it all the time.
Yeah, it just, yeah.
I wonder if after a while, just like you block it out of your mindset.
Yeah.
But for people like us, we don't have rundown castles everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? You'd want to go exploring these. And they've been picked over for centuries sort of thing, apparently. but no, just to go see these sort of things and from your canoe.
It'd be amazing.
That'd be amazing.
I want to go.
Tweed Valley Canoe Trail. Check it out. And if anybody's going to go over and do it, let us know.
Yeah.
Send us some pictures.
We'd like to hear about it.
Yeah.
Hear about your journey, your travel.
Yeah. Do it. Do it. Anybody from Scotland that's over there and doing it, do it. Let us know. and that's all I've got this week.
This week.
Yeah. This week. That's all we got. there's a lot happened this week.
Yes. Yeah. I was
a lot of political and
Happy to see the update with the Arctic Cowboys. It was something that was hanging over their head for way too long.
Yeah.
And you know, the prosecutors, they don't have to wait to the court date. They could have dropped it earlier, but I guess they made a last minute decision or they said, yeah, we'll cancel this, but we'll make them
worry about it nonstop until the last possible minute.
Part of the game that they were playing, somebody was playing a game there.
Yeah. Well, like I say, you know what, with between the Boundary Waters thing and the Arctic Cowboys thing, the keyboard
Warriors.
Commandos there,
yeah.
Like the comments that come out, like, oh, phenomenal. Like, come on. Gets tiring. Like, I'll read the articles anymore, but unless it's something like, you know, something like this, I just don't read the comment.
And anybody who would have left a decent comment and people that would have debated, those people long ago been chased away by the trolls, right?
Yeah.
So nobody wants to comment on anything because you could write a comment and look at it from every aspect and perspective and say, no, nobody can take this wrong. I'll post this. Next thing you know, you're getting piled on. It's like, where did they come up with that theory?
Right?
That's not what I said. That's not what I was getting at.
Well, I'm just wondering how they cooked and prepared that Arctic ostrich they shot. Prove me wrong.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it comes out as, is prove me mm-hmm. wrong.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what? I don't have the energy to deal with morons you.
Like, you know, there's people out there that just enjoy watching the world burn, right?
Mm-hmm.
They shoot stuff out of their mouth and they don't care what the end results are. And you see too many people with these around and it's just in the current political climate that all of this stuff is okay again, it seems.
Yeah. Everybody feels that they're entitled to say whatever they
want. I can say whatever I want.
Right? And yeah, it's like I say, it's gotten beyond tiring.
Yeah.
You know, you go to read a nice article and then there's somebody throwing something out there. Like,
yeah.
Where did that come from?
Yeah.
What does that have to do with the price of beans in China, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Anyway, that's my rant. I'm going to be like that other old man. Get the F off my lawn. Right? Oh, man.
But, yeah, it's good to see that it's come to resolution.
Yes. And when it comes to the boundary waters, just hang your food or get a barrel.
Just like, follow the rules.
Don't stop stressing about it.
And to be honest, like the boundary waters, is a lot of the areas are really, really remote. There's not going to be a lot of patrol. So unfortunately, what you're going to see is if anybody does have their campsite ripped up because of a bear, they're going to be retroactively charged for not hanging their food or something, right? So unfortunately, that's one of those things. It's like, and yeah, I've heard of here in the last couple of years in like Toronto, somebody jaywalks, gets hit by a car, and then the cops come to the hospital and say, yeah, well, you got hit by that car jaywalking? Yeah, here's your ticket for jaywalking. It's like, why are you hitting the victim? But you know what? He did jaywalk. I guess it is legitimate. And there's evidence of it because he got hit by a car while jaywalking. So in this case, maybe they're going to be ticketing people who, you know, have their campsite destroyed by a bear because they left food out.
Right.
Right. It'll be retroactive.
Well, and you know what? And some of the comments are the fact that, well, you know what? We go to sites that are messy because people left them and the bears just wander through.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so a few times. So it has
nothing to do, and yeah, well, keep your site clean. Well, okay, I'm keeping my site clean, but the people before me were absolute pigs.
Yeah, often enough, I come into a campsite, and it's like, oh, I don't know if I want to stay here. There's like unburned food in the fire pit, and there's garbage in the woods, and somebody left a pair of socks over there hanging from that tree, and it's like, what's wrong with these people, and is it safe to stay here?
Right. Especially when you got little kids.
Yeah.
Right. Or if you got a dog, because when a dog goes roaming.
Yeah, it's going to bring a bear back.
It's going to bring the bear back, right? That's what they say.
Yeah.
Mind you, we keep our dog pretty close to.
Yeah.
Right. If our dog's not in sight when we're at the campsite, then the dog's too far away.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. But we're looking forward to having a fantastic paddling season.
Oh, yeah.
We're heading north. We're heading south. We're heading west. I think the only way I'm not heading is east this year. I'm going quite the ways southwest and north.
Yeah. But yeah, some extensive trips planned.
Yeah, I just not heading. Oh, maybe I should cancel a winter camping trip and go east. Oh. All right. Nothing else?
Nothing else.
You sure?
Yep, positive.
I thought I did. I thought I had something else. No, nothing
nope,
over
that's
there.
It.
Nothing over there.
That's it. That's all.
Got a new cutting board. An old new one. Oh, I got some new books. Old new books.
Old new books.
Right? I'm looking forward to read those. I'd let you take one home, but it'll just sit on your shelf and I'll never get it back.
I'm gonna take this Lancaster one home. Oh, yeah.
Alrighty.
It is so full of...
Make sure I get it back.
...military history. Fascinating.
Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at Paddling Adventures Radio and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.